Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 20th of October. Dyslexia, language-based disorder, affects 15 to 20% of the American population, characterized by language processing problems when decoding oral and written words or translating thought to language, which, of course, can deeply affect a person's ability to read, to write, spell, or comprehend. It could also cause problems in sequencing with numbers, letters, or instructions, in differentiating between left and right-handedness, confusing concepts of space and time, and may also affect a person's emotional interactions and well-being. We're going to be talking about how long this has been diagnosed, how it is diagnosed, and what are appropriate instructions at school. How do schools deal with this in the state of Wisconsin or don't deal with this? And what about adults who have dyslexia? We will talk about that as well. We have in our studios this morning two guests. Sarah Pace is director of the Milwaukee Masonic Learning Center for Children, and this is located in our city in downtown Milwaukee. It's a nonprofit tutoring center dedicated to providing one-on-one reading and writing instruction to children with dyslexia learning disabilities. And this is based on the Orton-Gillingham program, which we will talk about. Sarah oversees the operations of after-school tutoring program, which includes quite a few children and a number of certified tutors. And she regularly conducts teacher training programs in the Orton-Gillingham methodology. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Also joining us in studio is Cheryl Ward. Cheryl is the current vice president of the Wisconsin branch of the International Dyslexia Association. She has two sons, and the youngest is now 20 with the reading disability dyslexia. She was director of Columbia St. Mary's Radiation Oncology Services for 20 years while navigating her son through the special education system at her local public schools. She's been advocating for students and parents by raising awareness of the pervasiveness of dyslexia. And Cheryl, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Kathleen. Good morning.
Good morning. Our number is 800-486-8655, and I'm sure we'll have a number of calls for both of you this morning. I was amazed when I read how many people may be dyslexic in this country. 15 to 20%? That's astoundingly high. Sarah?
It is. And what I have found since I started working for the Masonic Learning Center, as I'm out in the public just talking to people about what I do, it's amazing how many people will turn to me and say, you know what, my son is dyslexic, my husband's dyslexic, my brother, I'm dyslexic. It really is, it's prevalent, and it's really time that we start talking about it and really raise our awareness about dyslexia.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, when did you know that one of your sons was dyslexic? Did it manifest itself very early in life?
Well, it was relatively early. My story might be a little unusual than some in the past because he had a physical congenital defect. So there was some things that we were keeping our eyes on, certainly. So he was in the special education, and when he began his school career, he was a late talker. He had problems with speech and language, swallowing, and so forth. But the word dyslexia really did not come up until he was in his third grade year, largely because I was in a good school system. I thought that it was one of the top systems in the area, and in fact, it is a good school system. So I really did not feel that I had to get involved until the word actually came up. My knowledge to that point was very, very limited, like unlike many perhaps in the audience, maybe some word confusion or letter confusion, so forth. But it was with great courage that his special education teacher, while he was in third grade, looked at me, and she had many years of experience, looked at me and said, I am simply out of ideas. My bag of tricks is empty. I have tried everything I know. I believe he is severely dyslexic.
Oh my.
You need to get educated. You need to be his primary advocate. He will have teachers come and go. You have to assume this role. And this wonderful woman took me by the hand and started me and went hand in hand with me to meetings. They were regional. They were local. I will never forget being in Chicago, Illinois in 1998 at the International Dyslexia Association meeting, which is a convention of thousands of educators and researchers across the country, and actually some outside of the country, convening to share latest research and so forth. And then the then head of the Children's Health Division at the NIH, the National Institute of Health, Dr. Reed Lyon, announced to the group, and my son was 10 years old and was expected to, you know, in 3 months, he was turning 11 years old. And he told the group that the research is now clear that if a child who struggles to read does not receive appropriate, effective science-based instruction by the time they're 11 years old, you can certainly teach them, and you will narrow the gap, but it will never close. Hmm. And it was all I could do to continue sitting there. But that was really an epiphany for me that really underscored what I needed to do. And I went on what seemed to be a solo journey trying to discover how can I teach my very intelligent son. These kids are intelligent. Mm-hmm. And what can I do to help my son develop his full potential?
So tell me why it is that, considering this is so prevalent in the American population, that it wasn't discovered right away, Cheryl, and that it's not a mainstream part of American education, that these students are tutored, that this is diagnosed very early. How early, I guess, is another question. Can it be diagnosed? It seems to be something that still not many educators know about, Sarah.
Yeah, and that's true. And when we look at the history of teaching reading in this country, the pendulum has been swinging back and forth between whole language and phonics. Mm-hmm. Now, whole language, which is currently used in most of the schools today, it has an 80-85% success rate. So, you know, if you're in the business world, that's a pretty good success rate. But unfortunately, we're not in the business world. World. We are in the field of educating our children, and that means that 15-20% of those children are left a little bit behind because they don't pick up reading as well in the whole language camp. So the idea is that we need to really, I think the future of teaching reading is in understanding and identifying that different children learn to read in different ways, and we should really be embracing and incorporating several methods into our classroom. You know, kids don't necessarily need to be identified as a learning disability and sent out of the room with that stigma. Instead, as teachers and as educators, we need to realize that we need to have a few methodologies that we can bring into the classroom that helps different children learn how to read differently.
Right.
Some of that is going to be a phonics-based program using multisensory, which is what we do at the Learning Center. Other children exceed quite well with just whole language.
And when you talk about multisensory, that sounds like a way I think everybody ought to learn. It sounds like fun, and we all have all these senses. What does that mean? How is that different than the way we normally learn to read in school?
Well, it is engaging all the senses. It's what you see, what you hear, what you're touching, the body movement. And there is research, because these kids are wired differently, that's in simple terms, their brains are just wired differently. This 20% of us just think differently. We have strengths because of that, but we're wired differently. And the research is showing that when kids touch, when they move, when they experience different tactile sensations, when they have different sensory inputs, the cells in the brain are connecting. The reading is taking hold, and you can learn to read more quickly and more efficiently. And again, some people don't need this. Some people just inherently do learn whole language, but there is a large percent. You go to a Brewer game, and you're going to be looking at 3,000, 8,000 people in that audience, depending on the attendance that day, are going to have some story to tell or think back on how they struggle to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So you have a special method. You're tutoring one-on-one, I noticed, instruction, which must be important to helping people with dyslexia. What is it? What are you trained in?
We're trained in, it's an Orton-Gillingham-based tutoring program, and it's through the Scottish Rite Masonic Program. It's Orton-Gillingham-based in that it incorporates direct instruction. So that means that the information is directly and explicitly taught to our children. We have We basically have a curriculum of five levels. Level one is dealing with the simplest associations of our English language, which is basically the alphabetic code, teaching this the specific letters and the sounds that each letter make. And as we move up through the levels, we move into more complex aspects of our English language. We start every student that comes to us, no matter what their age, kindergarten up to 18, they start in level one. We make sure that they understand the concepts of consonants and vowels, what sound the vowels make, what sound the consonants make. And we move up. We teach syllabication, different syllable types. We teach syllable division patterns, how to break words apart and attack words syllable by syllable, blending strategies, and fluency drills, and all of these things that eventually help to enhance comprehension and further your reading skills. But Kathleen, I'd like to back up just
sure.
a minute and discuss a little bit more of what a learning disability is. So a learning disability is a neurological condition. In 15 to 20% of our population, the brain is wired just a little bit differently, and that affects and creates obstacles the way that language is processed in the brain. Now, especially how it processes phonics and phonological information, so the sounds of our language. When that breaks down, decoding skills break down. And when decoding skills break down, there's no fluency, thus there's no comprehension. And the whole point of reading is to gain meaning
sure.
for something. We should also mention that learning disabilities are inherited. Oftentimes, you will see a whole family history of reading disabilities and learning disabilities. One other piece of information I want to talk about is the reason why there is a big disconnect is in schools when we see that our kids are struggling. We administer a battery of tests on them. And if those results of this test characterizes dyslexia, they will be given the label of a specific learning disability. Whereas if you take your child into a medical center, they would run the same battery tests, see the same characteristics, and they would diagnose that child with dyslexia. On one hand, so a lot of times when we're talking about dyslexia, we are also talking about the 80% of kids in our schools that have been diagnosed with a learning disability. So we need to pretty much use those two terms interchangeably,
mm-hmm.
learning disability and dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
One last point I'll make is that dyslexia occurs in people who have average intelligence. Oftentimes, they have above-average intelligence. In fact, I tell the kids that come down to the centers, look around, because some of the brightest kids around Milwaukee come down here. And that seems almost paradoxical to them because they don't feel bright.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've learned that they're not capable. And so what we need to do is not only build these appropriate reading skills within these children, but also to raise the kids' awareness of themselves as being very bright people. And these people who often have strengths in sports and arts and design and
mm-hmm.
engineering
sure.
sometimes. We need to start looking at dyslexia and learning disabilities as an asset and not a liability.
Mm-hmm. So, Cheryl, your son started a program like this when he was 10 or 11, or
well,
what?
Well, actually, his path was, it took a while to pull all these pieces together, and so I really did create a partnership with the school. These are good people, generally. You know, these are people, they want to teach the kids. That's why they're there. Unfortunately, schools aren't in the business of remediating these kids for a variety of reasons. Certainly in today's economic climate, I don't even have to go into that real much. You know, the dollars may not be there. The ability to support our teachers and what they need to know or supplementing what they already know with new and keeping up on what's new out in the teaching arena, scientific-based, you know, strategies, be it reading or anything else, are costly for teachers to participate in. And then, of course, you just have education often had an idea of ideology versus the science, which is another, can be another whole topic of conversation. So there are many reasons. So because I didn't access in my area the knowledge base that I needed to be able to provide my son the instruction that he needed, I was really forced into not only partnering with the schools, but educating the schools and finding that information outside. So it wasn't until his real effective, and believe me, I had outside tutors. I, you know, was doing everything that I could within my scope of reality. But it wasn't until between sixth and seventh grade that he actually began instruction in an effective-based program. And that was in outside of Chicago.
Oh, my.
And that was in the summer times. It was very intense. It was many hours every day, Monday through Friday, for 6 to 8 weeks. He did this 5 years in a row. And then once he because as Sarah said, these kids have innate strengths. I mean, just interestingly enough, there was a study just recently completed out of London looking at entrepreneurs and the successful entrepreneurs. And the proportion of successful entrepreneurs that are dyslexic is greater than 35%, which when you look at the general population, it tends to be around 15% of successful entrepreneurs. So these people are out-of-the-box thinkers. They're, you know, the many people we know are dyslexic. They're leaders of our country. So the bottom line is that for me, because he had such a profound prephonemic deficit, he needed very intense intervention. So this is on a continuum, and that's something for people to keep in mind. Dyslexia is on a continuum. That's why there are many effective science-based programs, and the IDA, the International Dyslexia Association, has a wonderful, and we can make that available to people, matrix of these effective programs that your child may fit onto. But it wasn't for my son. He began his real reading, effective reading journey between sixth and seventh grade. He was fortunate that he was bright. He was fortunate that he had lots of support through school. He graduated, you know, a 3.1 from high school. He had the very good fortune to go to a learning disabilities college, the premier college, in my mind, in the country, for kids with learning disabilities, Landmark College, out east in the beautiful state of Vermont, who not only have the programs of accommodation that many of our colleges are now getting for these students, but really the difference there is they teach the strategies of learning so these kids can, for themselves, learn to apply their own strengths and put in the academic strategies. Because as we know, reading is the foundational strategies for every academic pursuit.
Right. Let's welcome phone calls for our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about dyslexia this hour of the program. Cheryl Ward, a parent of a child with dyslexia. She's currently the vice president of the Wisconsin branch of the International Dyslexia Association. Sarah Pace is with us, director at the Milwaukee Masonic Learning Center for Children, which is located in downtown Milwaukee. And it's a nonprofit tutoring center which provides one-on-one Orton-Gillingham reading and writing instruction to children with dyslexia learning disabilities. To your phone calls in just a moment, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for our guests and start with Gertrude from West Bend. Hi, Gertrude.
Good morning. I'm just delighted to hear this discussion, and I really feel I have something to add. I am a retired learning disabilities teacher from Milwaukee, and I was trained in the 60s when this title was just beginning, and my training was that it was where an individual just could not learn. It was such a severe disability that there was just no way that you could teach learning disabilities, and that percentage, or teach dyslexia to people who had it. It was like a chronic condition, and they had lots of case studies. But as we worked with it and tested and worked with children, we found that there were a lot of children who had reading problems I never considered them dyslexic. So mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. that using that word for such a large percentage, I have a little bit of trouble with. I found it made a big difference as to the approach of reading, and I was real happy to hear that this tutoring program uses Orton-Gillingham. Mm-hmm. That real strong language and phonic base was where I had a lot of success with children. And I did get children who were diagnosed as dyslexic, and if I could get them to read about third grade level, and I use a very strong phonics, and I can't remember the programs. There were two of them that were very, very strong. I've been retired for 17 years, so that's why I can't remember these. But anyway, they were very strong phonic-based, and if I could get children to figure out a word, I almost had them sing the letters individually, and then as they could do that, they gradually get to understand those words. They learn those words mm-hmm. after they can decode them. And if I could get someone to read third grade level, then they could start using the sight words. But programs that start with sight words and associations with whole words mm-hmm. and pictures just don't work for these kids. Mm-hmm. And I went to a workshop in Rochester, Minnesota that was just terrific. Mm-hmm. And this is the last I'll say, and then you can make some comments. There were two women, a psychologist and a learning disabilities teacher who worked together, and they developed Project Read. And it was just remarkable. And they were able to take the 10% children that were being diagnosed as dyslexic. They worked with them and found that there were only 2 or 3% that really had the very, very difficult time of learning how to read, whereas the others just needed this new reading approach, and they had some wonderful materials. Mm-hmm. I also got materials from the Gallaudet School for the Deaf that were wonderful materials for teaching language sequencing. So that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Gertrude. Thanks very much for the call. Sarah, you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, thank you very much, Gertrude. A couple comments that I was thinking of while you were talking is that, yes, you are right. When we talk about dyslexia, we're talking about a very wide scope of dyslexia. Some kids will have mild struggles, other moderate and severe. But what the evidence points to is that bringing in a phonics-based program and teaching reading at the younger levels, kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, first grade, it is also shown to be effective for children who don't have dyslexia. It helps their skills as well become even better readers. So bringing in a program, especially at the younger levels, can really do a lot to enhance reading skills in all children. And I was delighted to hear you talk about Rochester, because Rochester has been a real enlightened community. There's been a lot of good things that come out of Rochester, Minnesota, including the Project Read that you talk about, which is another Orton-Gillingham-based program that shares a lot of the similarities in instruction with what we do down at the center.
So, let me get this straight. I'm getting confused a little bit. Are you saying that whole language instruction is something that perhaps we could do without, that everybody should be trained reading in this kind of approach, or do we have to look at individual methods for most of the 30-some students who are in our classrooms?
Well, I would address that this way. whole language is something that there are going to be a chunk of students, out of the 100%, there are going to be a chunk of students, and it may be as many as 35-40%, that will read using whole language. And they will do so successfully, and they will go through their academic career successfully. So you've got another 60% or so that are going to need some amount of phonics assistance to be able to effectively read. Dyslexia is addressing that 20% of that remaining 60. So I think what Sarah is indicating and what Gertrude, our caller, had indicated is if you address all of your students using a phonics-based program, you can effectively begin to reach 100% of your students. The discussion of dyslexia, however, a truly dyslexic person in our classroom, public classroom, is where maybe it does get a little confusing, because the time design in a public classroom may not be enough intensity, duration, or go at a pace that is going to reach all students, certainly some of those students on the learning disability continuum. So what we're focusing on is really looking at the continuum and recognizing that there is severity along the continuum, and there are various components of a good, effective multisensory program that you're going to want to incorporate for all students, but recognizing that you still have to parse out individuals for more intense, more systematic instruction.
And can you identify those students pretty easily? Is this an easy diagnosis or is it not? Is it
yes,
hard?
Yes. No, it's an easy. It is easy, but you have to understand what you're looking for. You have to. You can early identify these kids as early as 4 and younger. Hmm. You can raise questions with these children earlier. If you're looking at toddlers and they're not rhyming words with you, when they're not showing a real joy of discussing books that you may be reading with them side by side, when you begin to do your ABC games with them, are they repeating? Can they say sounds back to you? As they get older, as they get to kindergarten, first grade, are they leaving spaces between words that they're writing or pretending to write? So are they showing signs of things, you know, taking place and beginning to understand the sound to the symbol of written words? Are they doing that? And then as they get older, you know, are they able to memorize things? Can they follow instructions? There's many things that educators can look for, and there's many pre-identification tools and screening tools that can be used that are very effective and very easily done with students.
Let's go to Rich from Prairie Farm next. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Fine, you?
Pretty good.
Good.
I can remember as a kid, my father was a art professor, and he always talked about how his students, he had an inordinate number of art students that couldn't pass their exams. And he lobbied real hard with the State Board of Regents to let him take oral exams. So, and he also talked a lot about how kids that were real high in language skills a lot of times were low in the sciences and the arts. And my question is there a correlation between spatial reasoning and creativity and dyslexic people?
Thank you, and that's a great question. As we were talking before, people with dyslexia oftentimes have real strengths and talents in areas like arts and theater and mathematics even sometimes. So, yes, oftentimes you'll see kids that have, you know, language issues and they have the dyslexia, but they have real strengths in other areas like art.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call, Rich. We go to Mary next from Fond du Lac. Hi, Mary.
Hello, Dave, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine, Mary. How are you?
Not bad.
Good.
Great to talk to you. I've listened for years to you, but now I get to talk to you.
Thanks for calling, Mary.
Yes, I have three daughters, of which two have dyslexia. And I don't know anything about the educational system. English is my second language. But about 20 years ago, when my girls were in third grade, my second ones especially, the teacher came up to me and she says to me, "We have a very bright student here. How come she can't read?" Mm-hmm. Mrs. Vandermeer, she was. And I said to her, "Okay, what can I do?" And so she gave me books. And then for Emma to work in after school hours, which we did every day for an hour. And then after that, I would take her and basically would take a book and I would read words to her and the lines to her, and then whatever she could do, speak or say, and I would go on if I noticed they couldn't do it. And then through that, doing that about for 3 months, basically sight reading, I taught her how to read. She was in third grade when we did that, and when she started third grade, she was in level one English. When she left third grade, she was in fifth grade.
Oh, great.
Did a great job.
So, and then I did the same thing with my youngest daughter. And so the sight reading really worked, and it was totally intuitive on my part to start doing that. I don't know why I did that. I didn't, you know, I'm left-handed. I had not recognized my own problems as dyslexic, and even not at that time when I was teaching my daughters. But it, both cases, 3 months, every evening, reading for an hour, like that, worked like a charm. And all my three daughters are professionals. One, the one that had big trouble is Emma, and she went on to MIT. She still, however, if she writes the word school, she will write it backwards, S-H-C, still today. And she will still switch the numbers. And at one time in high school, she had a physics exam, and she had switched every number around. So when she could go to the teacher and show that, he accepted it. But there was no official declaration that they were dyslexic. And I have nieces and nephews in the Netherlands who have dyslexia, and they were properly diagnosed at that time. What the difference in there is that when they do an exam, they get extra 15, 20 minutes for each exam.
Oh, interesting.
So that they could recheck, or I don't know quite why, but they got more time for that. That was really a very interesting story.
Thanks, Mary, so much for your call, sir.
Well, thank you, Mary. You know, your story is so common as I talk to parents every day who are trying to find solutions to help their children learn how to read. Some of these parents are the most educated resources that we have in our community because they are so passionate and they have done everything they can to figure out what is going to work. And what I would love to see is that schools and school administrations would be a little more open and receptive to what some of these parents have to say when they are working with the schools to find appropriate instruction. If you are a parent out there and you are in similar situations and you feel like your child is struggling and could have dyslexia, has a learning disability, needs to get help, I would urge you to give us a call at the Learning Center so that I can talk with you more. And
you want to give that number?
Sure. Well, our number down there is
414-765.
I'm sorry.
765-9189.
That's right. 765-9189.
Okay.
That would be the first step to try to get your child some help. Another thing we need to do now also is we need to start talking with our educators and our schools and start talking about multisensory education. We need to get our teachers informed and get our teachers trained so that they can be providing this kind of education in the schools for these kiddos.
I noticed in the information that I have on this that Wisconsin does not offer multisensory structured language education, which, as you both have said, is crucial for providing good instruction in these areas of reading. Is there an effort underway to make this happen in the
state? Yeah, there certainly is, and I think that's inconsistent. I think to say that it isn't at any school in a public, you know, in any public school in Wisconsin would not be true. I think there are districts out there, their pockets are, you know, they start, they stop, they fizzle, you know, depending on the teacher, perhaps the curriculum, instructor, et cetera. But overall, we do have a long way to go with our understanding. But, you know, I want to back up to and just reemphasize how critically important it is for a parent to move quickly when they suspect that gut feeling that they suspect something's wrong with their son, their daughter, their niece, nephew, etc., that they move quickly, because the data is very clear that we are waiting in excess of 1 year, closer to 2 years, before people really raise their hand and put that flag, be it the school bringing it to your attention or the parents. And again, there's a variety of reasons for that. But certainly thinking about those parents, and we are having, we've heard from proactive people calling in. But there are people out there that aren't, they're dealing with their own parents' self-esteem issues and thinking, oh, Johnny, you know, or Susie will get it. Maybe it's developmental. Maybe that's what they're being told. Maybe they think it's motivational, whatever. But parents need to really stop and move quickly, because the interventions, once they happen more quickly, they can help the child rise to their academic achievement expectations much more readily, much more efficiently, and they can circumnavigate longer-term problems. And then also, this really ties into the overall expenses we have now in the country and the state and so forth. If we can identify and remediate and deal with these things early on and remove and peel away the layers of stigma that may be related to either the word dyslexia or a learning disability, and just really look at it as a broad scope of teaching kids to read well, we would go very, very far and really, you know, let these kids reach their potential.
We are going to take more phone calls in just a moment. We have an email. Both he and his wife have learning disabilities, spelling and quick reading symbolic sequences, and they have successfully learned to live with them. They have a two-year-old and a newborn, and they're wondering, are they at higher risk for having a learning disability? Should they be working with the two-year-old right now? Sarah?
They are very wise as to start to think about it and to watch their two-year-old as he or she begins to develop language. Cheryl touched upon certain things that you can do when a child is young is be very aware of whether or not, for instance, they can recognize rhymes, whether or not they can manipulate rhymes. It's the phonemic awareness that is the biggest indicator on whether or not a child will acquire reading. So as a young child, I would start to watch for whether or not they can recognize rhymes, whether or not they can, when they do start writing in kindergarten, what a lot of kindergarten teachers will do is encourage inventive spelling. So children don't need to worry about correct spelling. They just write words however the child feels like it should be written. And a teacher can use that, the event of spelling, to give them indication on whether or not that child is having difficulty with phonemic awareness. For instance, if a child is trying to write the word dress and they write a J sound because they write a J letter, that gives you certain indications on whether or not that child is adequately hearing the sounds in that word. But if there is a family history of dyslexia and learning disabilities, they are wise to watch the child and to just take note on how that child begins to pick up and whether or not they can manipulate language at a young age.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about dyslexia this hour of our program. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or you can send an email if you'd like, and that address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to your phone calls now for Cheryl Ward and Sarah Pace, and we go to Christine from Holman. Hi, Christine.
Good morning. I'm so excited to have this subject on the air. I cannot tell you. I am 55 years old, and I basically have been living with this dyslexia in my life for about the last 40 or 31 years when my two younger brothers were discovered that they had it. And to make a long story short, it goes back, as far as we know, to my great-uncle, Bill, who was told in Wheaton High School in Minnesota that he was absolutely unable to learn. Mm-hmm. He later became the head of neurosurgery at the University
of Minnesota. Oh, my gosh. There you go.
Dr. Bill Payton was his name, if you'd like to check that.
No, I believe you.
And my two brothers are also extremely bright and can remember everything and anything they've ever heard in their life.
Yeah.
And I spent a great deal of my time teaching them. And matter of fact, both of them lived with my husband and I so that I could help them get through college, help them read, and I also had two cousins in that generation that had dyslexia. Hmm. And I was so thrilled when my daughter, Lisa, did not have it. But my son does. Mm-hmm. My grandson, Peyton, we have found out does. And last year, he was finishing his second grade, and his mother was called in to a meeting to have him tested for LD. And I think I had been in a little bit of denial with him, and I said to her, I need to go to that meeting with you.
You know, there's great frustration for parents as they're going through this journey, and I so identify with so much of what you're saying, but, you know, people sometimes laugh, but I really, really consider this to have been a gift and a blessing. It has given me a much more appreciation just overall of the human condition, so to speak. We are all unique individuals, and these children are unique individuals. They learn differently. They require different strategies. But to your point, the potential that is lost in so many individuals, our prisons are filled with these individuals. There's many, many studies now showing that those people incarcerated are the majority of them, some 80%, when interviewed, will cite that reading is a difficulty for them. Adolescents with substance abuse record, more than 50% of them will cite that they have difficulty reading. So kudos to you and your family for really supporting and developing and utilizing their strengths and learning, because it can be done, but it is hard, hard work.
Yeah, and I would like to say, too, that dyslexia cannot be cured. Once you are born with dyslexia, you will always have dyslexia. However, the struggles and the complications can be overcome with the correct remediation, and especially early intervention and remediation is really essential. If children get the appropriate remediation at an early age, boy, you know, especially we're dealing with some of the brightest kids, they can go off and do incredible things. If children don't get the appropriate remediation, oftentimes what we find in the statistics is if they come from a loving, supportive home, parents who love them, parents who help them with their self-confidence, those people can go off and do, hold good jobs and be good tax-paying citizens. They may not reach their God-given potential, maybe they will, but they can usually, they can do okay. They can hold their own. If a person with dyslexia does not have a lot of love and support at home, what often happens is more often than not, that child will not make it through high school. Child will drop out and oftentimes will become part of the juvenile correctional system. And when you think about this being some of our smartest people in our population that are now dropping out of school and going into our correctional facilities, you are now looking at some of the smartest people becoming tied up in the criminal system. So when we're talking about putting dollar amounts on, you know, appropriate education, we really need to look at the whole picture there.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the call. We go to Lori from Menominee Falls. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I love your show. I'm an aunt and a great aunt to lots of kids, and we have dyslexia running through the family with different sisters and different kids. And my one nephew, he's still struggling. He's up in Winona, which has a great learning disability program. He's in computer graphics, and he's a lot like a lot of dyslexics. He has major talent in art. Mm-hmm. But both my niece from another sister, both of those families bought two different school systems. And my niece, who today finally graduated college and has a decent career going, my sister was called up there when she was in seventh grade at the middle school and told that Becky would drop out, would never make anything of herself. Mm. And you can basically expect your daughter to be a failure. And similar thing happened with Jamie, my nephew. So they have succeeded in spite of the school system, which were, because we have medical people in our family, both of those kids were very early. Like, I think both of them were diagnosed when they were about 5 years old. We have children's nurses in our family, and both knew that something was going on with both kids. So, you know, they can succeed. But, from what I experienced and what we saw with the school systems, they were not very much help. And thank God the parents of both of these kids and another niece from another family in another state fought to help these kids get through school.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl?
That's why it's so critical. Your comments are so profound, and I hope people listening really listen closely to your story. We cannot count in our current school structure to be able to address the needs of all these kids. We need to become informed. We need to raise awareness, and that's what, you know, the International Dyslexia Association is about, certainly, is to provide knowledge, raise awareness, and to seek helping our kids outside of the school environments. Now, our challenge is to broaden that net, to make more people aware, more people educated, so we can begin to change things. This is a real grassroots awareness. We're looking at 2 in 10 people walking around. It's on a continuum. We need to address it. So in addition to Sarah, you know, giving you the number down at the Masonic Children's Learning Center here in Milwaukee, I'd also like to give you and welcome you to get in touch with both the international headquarters, the IDA headquarters at 1-800-ABCD. 1-2-3.
Oh, isn't that clever?
Isn't that clever?
ABCD.
1-2-3. They're also on the web at www.interdys.org, interdys.org,
okay.
Or certainly you can call us at the Wisconsin branch at 608-355-0911, and we are WIIDA.org, and someone will get back to you, and we can provide you with information about scientific-based effective reading instruction.
Thanks for the call. We have time for maybe one more phone call. Susan from Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that my daughter was diagnosed, she was in the special education program as a preschooler. When they did the screening programs at 3 years old, she was identified as having speech problems, and she started getting speech therapy. And when her speech problems were corrected and it was time to let her go, the speech therapist says, you know, there's just something that just doesn't seem right here. Why don't we go ahead and put her through, you know, maybe learning disabilities test? And they did, and they, at that point in preschool, they don't they don't say it's dyslexia or anything. It's just a learning disability. Mm-hmm. And so she was identified before she was four as most likely having a learning disability, and it was dyslexia. The interesting thing about that is it allowed her to be in special education from the time she was in kindergarten.
Which probably made a difference. Your phone is cutting out, so we're going to get a response, and we're running short on time. Sarah?
Well, congratulations. That's almost an ideal situation, and hopefully a situation that we can move towards as in public education and early diagnosis and early intervention. One comment I'd like to make about that is in terms of getting the child with learning disabilities the correct accommodations and leveling the playing field so that they can learn on the same level as everyone else, that label is a key part so that children need to be diagnosed with a learning disability or with dyslexia. And oftentimes, because these kids are so bright, they will maybe their cognitive functioning will be in the above average range or in the high average range, then they'll still be functioning in the average. And there will be a discrepancy there, but schools will not qualify them for special services because they still are functioning in the average range. I would like... Okay.
And yeah, we're about out of time. Thank you both very much for being with us during this October, which is Dyslexia Awareness Month, so a good time for us to have a conversation. Cheryl Ward, thanks very much for being with us. Sarah Pace, thank you so much for being with us as well. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and for doing on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee as well. For all of your calls, we thank you. News coming up from National Public Radio. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.